Well, from the collapse of the World Trade Towers to raising butterflies seems to be a bit of a jump. I don't think anyone yet has come up with a way to inflict serious damage with a butterfly.
You've never seen an attack butterfly?
No, well, the Pentagon may be working on it. No, seriously. Well, there are very intelligent people. Seriously, if nature does actually dictate that combat is essential to the survival of the species, hey, why don't we see butterflies with heavy armaments? You know, butterflies with fangs, butterflies that can flutter in under the radar and
drop something. There might come a time when they just figure they had to take preemptive action. They'd say, look, these plaid-clad apes are getting out of hand.
Well, there may indeed, yes. Well, I've done some reading about, the new anti-Darwinian movement called intelligent design, the idea that the universe is so complex that it could only have been put together by one divine programmer with a penchant for video games. But I recently saw another proposal on the web, actually, unintelligent design, proposing that a whole pantheon of gods designed the universe by committee.
Ah, that explains it. So, back to our stories. I think that there actually are a couple of common threads between these stories because they have to do with getting in touch with what's real and what matters and what makes life something more than just the occasional sitcom and severe stress. This is A Butterfly Gardener.
Alan Moore, for the past 11 years, has made butterflies a major part of his life. When we met, he didn't talk a whole lot about his life, but he talked a lot about butterflies.
Well, I've always been involved in the environment, and occasionally things would happen. You know, an intuitive voice would tell you, and you go, I'd always follow it. And it was years later, after forming many groups, and I decided nothing was going to ever change. We try to work for change with Common Cause and do campaign reform, Sunshine Law. They always found loopholes and ways to get around the reforms. I had recently had two friends die from pesticide sensitivity, and that they died within 2 weeks of each other. I thought I'd take it up as an issue. So Rodale Press was holding a conference on composting. And I met a gentleman there that invited me to a butterfly garden after the conference and told me it was all compost and that the butterflies couldn't be around pesticides. And so an integral part of butterfly garden was not using pesticides. I saw a simple solution to use compost and promote safety in pesticides and getting people to stop using them when possible by putting butterfly gardens in. And I left the garden with this totally transformed feeling that I was going to go out and we were going to plant gardens in schools and communities. And I got into my car and played the tape, and they were butterfly songs. It was like messages, just what was happening at that moment suddenly was made clear in the music. And I cried all the way home as each song played. Then I told my wife I was leaving my job and I was going to go out to put butterfly gardens all over. And that's how it began. Well, it was just a fascination. There were hundreds of butterflies there. And a sense of the beauty and how delicate it was. A sense of wonder and awe. By spreading gardens like that, you could spread that same feeling. And instead of telling people what you think, you know, is good for the world, it literally, by being around butterflies, evolves out of them, untold, which is beautiful. You can't corrupt that. It touches a universal. And I found that, you know, as crazy as that idea was, it really connected, and it really played out like that. And I'm still learning. It's been 11 years now. As we began doing this stuff, I began to get visits from butterflies. I've heard stories of people that would put their finger up and a butterfly would land on it. And one day, thinking of that, after a butterfly passed, I did that. And it came right to me. My friend, you should have seen his face. Other people that got involved with our project would sometimes have the same thing happen to them. or they'd have a butterfly dream, or they'd have some kind of enlightening experience. It wasn't like random. It was like always synchronicity kicking in over time. So it's been a kind of spiritual unfolding. It's a metaphor for hope, love, peace, healing, awakening. My daughter's boyfriend's father died. And I've been collecting a lot of stories about butterflies and grief. And they were powerful medicine for that. So 2 days before the funeral, I saw a monarch butterfly in my garden. And I wanted to, like, get that butterfly so I could bring it to the funeral. But I couldn't keep a monarch butterfly in captivity for 2 days. So I let that butterfly go. And the day before the funeral, I actually was out there in the garden, and I had no butterflies. And I'm thinking I made a mistake. And I was going into the house with my wife, who told me, give up, it's getting dark. And she was right in front of me. And I stopped on my lawn and I looked down and I made a prayer, God, I need a butterfly. I got up, I walked in the house. She said, you won't believe this. She was on the telephone and a woman had just called her. She just found a monarch butterfly and she thought it needed somebody's care. So I put on a butterfly shirt and ran over to her house to get the monarch butterfly, and she had on the same shirt. My wife had told me it was the butterflies of her. And I just remember saying and feeling so strange about it, you give me no choice, you know? And it was 27 years marriage. I had, on three occasions, had an opportunity like this open up, like a golden epiphany. And she always talked me out of it. So when this thing emerged, I already knew that there was nothing that was going to deter me. And she knew it too. She just sensed it. And she took over my business, which was landscaping. And I was in the process at that moment of tearing up half my lawn to naturalize it. So that became a butterfly garden. Became a magical spot. And my mailman used to stop there and he'd just sit and had waterfalls in there. And that was his favorite place to stop on his route. Then it made the newspapers. And they started talking about magic. And I started talking about Alice in Wonderland. That moment in that garden somehow reminded me of Through the Looking Glass. And we started this group, try to use music and art and dance and all the transformative things that people do and create, and to create a vehicle and use the butterfly as kind of logo to that and bring musicians all over the world together. And the other program we did was the raising of butterflies in the classrooms, which was what really impacted the children. Back in 2000, we put one ad in the paper about doing this, getting children in the schools to raise butterflies for Earth Day. And 10,000 kids just from that ad got involved with that. That's what I like to see, smiling faces and kids in butterfly gardens. I took a great leap in coming out to California. So anyhow, when my credit was running out, and I refused to get a job because all the work and networking we were doing was like full-time work. I wound up on food stamps, thinking what a strange turn of events. I used to have this little meditation, what would a butterfly do? And you'd find yourself like lightening up. I think the focus is rising above the plane of the problem, like Einstein. You can't solve a problem at the level it's at. You have to rise above it. I used to think Einstein's formula, E equals MC squared, that the equal sign is just another symbol like the butterfly for transformation. And in that mathematical sign, if you put the butterfly over the equal sign, it adds a spiritual component of the dance, how energy and matter bounces back and forth. A gentleman, his name's Thomas Tanimori, he sent me an email one day. He told me when he was 7 years old, he had a dream that that he was talking to a white stork. The white stork got pulled into a fireball, and the ashes came down as monarch butterflies. And he woke up screaming, and his family woke up and comforted him that night. And the next morning in his schoolyard, he looked up in the sky and saw the fireball. It was August 5th in Hiroshima, August 6th. He lost his whole family. 40 years later, he was living in the Bay Area and was asked to go to a Hiroshima observance in San Francisco. He was on the Bay Bridge approaching Treasure Island, and he saw a mushroom-shaped cloud and his butterfly dream and the fireball. That whole thing came back to him like a lucid dream. On his way there, what was flooding his mind was a talk about how he hated America for the bomb, for its arrogance. Then this cloud appeared and the dream came back, and he had to pull over on Treasure Island because he couldn't drive. And a white butterfly flew into his window and wound up landing on his shoulder. And he knew he had to give a speech on forgiveness. And he went to San Francisco and he wowed them. People cried. They came up and hugged him. He started a Japanese butterfly peace group. He used the butterfly as a symbol for global peace. Other people are doing the same thing in Europe. So it's kind of remarkable when you link up all of these people and see the effect that this is kind of have. And now it's becoming kind of more conscious. I just went up to the Holberg Butterfly Garden before coming here. And there were very few. And the last four times I was there, I didn't notice many. Because the gardens I've been in have been like, you know, just butterflies everywhere. And I began to think that all the vineyards and the orchards around the area and the spraying has a lot to do with that. The solution really is a raise in consciousness, a paradigm shift, stress simple solutions that involve love, that connect to us like butterflies do. I think what we need to do in the raise of consciousness is to put on events, bring some of the best musicians with the most inspiring music that is tuning into this kind of energy and bringing together. That would be a transformative event. If we champion butterflies and save them from extinction, we'll be helping ourselves.
In Sebastopol, we were talking with Alan Moore. Alan's website is www.butterflyspirit.org. And I should say, he has recently had a heart bypass operation. We wish him a good recovery. Undoubtedly, he has visitors at his window.
Now, here's something you've heard before. We usually say at this point, if you've got a story about a journey, change, crossroads, challenge, whatever, we'd be interested in hearing it. But we mean that. We really do. And you don't have to have written a book about it or be on your national concert tour. It's not what this is about. This program is about people who are pretty ordinary until you really look at them, and then they're extraordinary. Go on. Email us at info@hitching.org or go to the website. You'll see the link. Drop us a line about it.
And also at the website, we have a monthly story contest, which, no, it is not high stakes. It won't make your career. You just have to keep playing the lottery if you really want security in this life. You know, the best you can do is win a CD. But we're getting some wonderful responses, a different theme each month. Literary quality is not the prime thing. The main thing is human interest.
So if you're up for sharing your experience, please let us know. www.hitching.org.
Well, a short time ago, I had a dream that wasn't mine. A friend dreamed it about me. Really simple, kind of peculiar, but to me it was very evocative. Usually my dreams are really boring. I learned long ago that if I needed to escape from the monster, I can just sort of do this little jerk and I'd wake up, which is comforting. I recommend it if you're really scared, but I can't help but feel that over the years, this self-censorship has robbed my dreams of a certain theatricality. God no longer hires the best screenwriters for my nightmares. But this one I had no control over. I call this Diana's gifts. This was a dream of a friend about me.
Was it Meg, Susan? I can't.
She said it was very vivid, very real, and I made some kind of joke.
You would. You're always...
I mean, she knew I was going through a lot of stress right now, and so maybe she wanted to make me feel
better. A little better. Make me feel happier, more optimistic.
But she was telling the truth. I could tell.
Yes, definitely. Who was it?
Hello, this is Annette. I'm calling from your house.
We were...
Elizabeth and I were in Europe for some reason.
And we
got a call
in Amsterdam.
In Brussels, I think, that we had won a major award.
Thing came in FedEx, and I just had to sign
it
for
was,
it.
I thought maybe it was a joke.
It might have been a joke. Some kind of stupid joke. Somebody's idea of a joke.
But it was true. It really was.
I didn't know how important you were.
It was an award that I'd never heard of, but it was very prestigious, not something we couldn't have applied for it because we'd never heard of it.
Congratulations.
But somebody who knows, somebody knew our work and...
Recognized. Understood it. Really got it.
I had no idea.
It's something about arts.
And a large amount of money attached.
That comes in handy for really...
Although this was just a dream.
Not my dream. Who was it? Mary Tressa.
It was our friend Mary Tressa's dream.
She told me.
And you're supposed to be at it.
And then we were at the ceremony. And up at the podium. And the award was being presented by... Diana.
Diana. Princess.
Princess Diana, or a couple of friends named...
Diane Pepitone.
Diane Darling.
Diane Johnson.
Diane Radkevich.
Diane Murphy.
Diane Young.
Diana, or Diane, are lots of people, mostly women, named Diana. Or the goddess.
Or sometimes dreams make puns. It might have been Dionysus, the god of theater and wine. The goddess Diana.
And I remember...
Actually, I don't remember this directly because it was actually our friend Mary Tress's dream.
That's who...
She's very... And she told me some of it and also told more of it to Elizabeth, and Elizabeth told it to me, so I don't remember...
I remember
directly.
Distinctly going up to the podium to receive the award. It's the kind of award you always felt like you deserved, but you knew by your late 40s that you would never be famous or...
Celebrated.
Or
significant.
Except to a few scattered souls. Or the seagulls watching you picnic on the beach at San Gregorio and hoping for some pickings.
But right now,
I looked out over the faces. I looked across the street. I saw a man sitting there. He looked exactly like...
It was me.
Like me.
And this wasn't my dream. It was my friend Mary Tress's dream. But it was so...
It was me. The man was sitting on a stool by a large bin, like for the Salvation Army. And he was collecting clothing for the poor. It was a place where people could donate clothing. And if you didn't have pants, you could get a pair of pants. And so...
It was me.
The guy was sitting there, waiting for people to make donations.
It was me.
Only nobody was. Nobody was making...
Donations.
Nobody. And he looked very, very...
He looked very...
Very...
Just very...
Very,
very, very...
Extremely...
Old. And he knows he's invisible except to himself. Nobody sees him, nobody even pretends he's there. He only sees himself or remembers seeing himself in a mirror sometime. And he's trying to count the people passing by, and it's a blur. And it seems like they used to come up and say, here's a shirt, here's a pair of pants, but they drift by. And It seems like he used to have a bell to ring, but now he just shakes his hand in the wind, and there's nothing. And then I saw him die. Very slowly, he leaned forward just a little, and it looked like he might be getting up. And then he hung there a second, his whole life, and he keeled over sideways. Just fell onto the sidewalk like an empty waste basket. He was dead.
I was dead.
It felt right.
That is as much as I know about the dream.
Wow.
And I told somebody all this, and they said, well, what do you think it means? And I said, how do I know what it means? I'm dead.
That was a joke.
Well, you're only dead in the dream. I mean, dreams...
Because it wasn't actually my dream. It was my friend Mary Tress's dream. And so was it something that had a meaning for her or a meaning for me?
Myself is falling off.
But that falling.
The rest of it is triumphant. Or
the body empty. Hey, my award, remember?
Maybe it means I should see the doctor.
Then I woke. That was a week ago, maybe. I've been working on a steel fence, sanding away the rust and giving it a coat of primer. And then I'll paint it, about 120 feet long, very tedious. I've got 30, 40 feet to go. And try not to think about the award.
What kind of an award? We've never heard of.
But thinking about falling over dead, and the election, and the war, and the days of judgment.
You see the paper today?
My fellow Americans.
Are they really going to?
And I'm working, and I look up into the trees. Buttermilk sky.
We are pleased to present this award.
Wind and the flicker of rain.
In recognition of your achievement.
Thunder
over the years.
And a sliver of sunlight.
We are pleased to present
the hearts of trees.
Your achievement.
Some song about thunder comes from the hearts of trees.
Your ongoing exploration of the human heart and its depths.
Diana's gifts. It's been about a week, and I keep thinking, hey, come on, it wasn't even my dream. I've still got a lot of fence to do, and keep up with the news, and the death of reason, and the ashes, and the bitters. But every day, what I feel is what it feels like.
Beautiful.
I come out into the
sun, rain, wind, heart.
It's beautiful. Breathe it in. Diana's gifts.
That was Diana's Gifts, written and performed by us and inspired by Meritressa Farnham. Thank you. And next month, the second of our periodic series of Artists' Journeys.
We'd like to ask you to help save humanity.
If you'd like to hear more Hitchhiking Right Away, you can visit our website, and you can read a bunch of very short true stories sent in by listeners, and you can also listen online anytime to every radio show we've done. This is now number 84.
We'd like to ask you to foster love and joy and the humility that should come from having started out wearing diapers.
And you can look at our audio library of CD anthologies, real-life portraits, and audio dramas. Get inspiration, entertainment, terror, and love.
We'd like you to put the kibosh on global warming by keeping your cool.
And if you're in the Bay Area, we're starting a live magical performance party, the Hitchhiker's Cabaret Cauldron, the final Friday of every month. Hitchhiking Off the Map is produced by The Independent Eye, mostly by Bishop and Fuller, but with help from Lou Judson, Colleen Burrows, and Eli Bishop, as well as four feral cats, innumerable hummingbirds, and one bedraggled raccoon. We're supported, somewhat, by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts and by the Hitchhikers Guild. That's our way of asking you for money to support the program. And memberships, which includes a membership card, can be found at www.hitching.org.
We'd like you to float like a butterfly and get down into those orifices like a bee. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller.
Peace
and joy.
Joy, joy, joy.
One story that I would like to share about when the women were here from New York was we got a call from a couple of them saying, you know, they were a little nervous about flying on the plane. They'd been inside the building when the second plane hit at the towers. You know, but not to worry. They were going to go ahead and get on the plane and come out. But what they really wanted to know was, did we have skydiving here in California? They really wanted to get over their fear of airplanes. So they thought, well, if they jumped out of one, that would take care of it all in one day.
That's a New Yorker's idea of therapy.
Right. Rather than having to do long-term therapy or something like that, they just jump out of a plane and then they'd be over it. And so we got them a few jumps out at the Santa Rosa Airport, and we had four of them go up in full uniform and jump out and say it was done.